doesn't matter your age. And when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, we're living now.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Stosh Ziolkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your Storytelling Hour co-host at enlightenradio.org. Today, our theme is neighborhood stories. Our show opened with Tarry Here by Andy Offit Irwin, who has graciously let us use his song, original song.
Yay, Andy!
Open our show. Yay, Andy. Okay, so before we tell stories, we might mention a bit about storytelling this past week. And I'm going to ask you, Fanny, about your workshop, a four-day workshop.
Well,
I'm tired.
It was more of a four-day one-on-one coaching session than an actual workshop. I was with Eileen Evans, my good friend and mentor, who's working with me on developing my great-grandfather's stories, Thomas Henry Barnes, my dad's grandfather, and creating an hour to a 90 minutes of story from him in his words. He left the Stosh.
Oh yes.
He left the family a 100-page transcript of his life story and his father's life story and a lot of what happened to him between 1849 when he was born and 1942. When he died. And so Eileen's helping me with music and voice control and developing TH's voice, the actual sound of his voice as I portray him. And so we had a lot of work to do, but I was at Eileen's house in Kempton, Maryland, actually right on the state line between West Virginia and Maryland. So we were talking about T.H. Barnes, but I think I'm finished.
Okay. Well, I've heard you do most of the stories about T.H. Barnes, and I have a lovely copy of that,
of
his words,
yes,
and
his
I've
transcript.
Read it, and that's very interesting.
There'll be more to come. I have another six stories that are just in process that you definitely haven't heard.
No.
So,
right.
There's more.
Well, that's great. That's great. I couldn't do anything about my great-grandfather because I don't know who he was. Okay. So, and this past week, we were both fascinated by Susan Gordon at your series, at Stories in the Round in Hagerstown.
Wasn't she wonderful?
She was wonderful. I was so impressed with her storytelling. Always impresses me. But she read from a part of the novel that she is working on. And I told her afterwards that I would love to have her read any of my favorite stories because she reads so well. And I had a chance at the end of this week to hear someone else on stage actually reading poetry and information about her life. It was a fine actress in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And
you didn't tell me about this.
Terry took me to the theater.
Oh.
Terry and AC and I went to the theater. And
holding out on me.
Well, you were off with Eileen. So I had to find somebody else. I think we better stop this line of speaking. Anyway, I was struck by the fact that I would have preferred Susan to be reading the poetry, even though I thought the woman in the show did a fine job. She was very good, but I've heard Susan read before and just astonishes me how when. I'm glad I don't have to read alternate with her.
Well, actually, my favorite part of the Stories in the Round performance that Susan did was the backstory of the story of her travels through Tucker County and Preston County, West Virginia, where she's interviewing people for her novel.
Right.
And
in riding in a 1999 Cadillac.
Black Cadillac, yes. Yeah. But the people she met and her sense of the land and the forest and the waterways and the history there, the lumber camps, which is the setting for her,
right.
her story.
Well, Fanny.
Well, actually, that reminds me of a whole nother tangent that we could talk about later,
okay.
which is the coal town where Eileen Evans lives, where I was
right.
this weekend. The coal company pulled out in something like 1934, but the buildings are still there, and there were 200 coal mining families that lived in that town at its height, and lots of men came in from outside the town as well to mine, and just the evocation of that way of life and
right.
the remnants that are still there is quite moving.
I'm sure it is. So we're talking about neighborhoods today.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, here's my question for you. How about you tell our listeners a bit about your neighborhood when you were growing up and... You have
mean
a story
tell us,
for us.
Tell a story?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I grew up in West Philadelphia, and my strongest memories of that neighborhood, of the city of Philadelphia, are from the all of 1950. I was born in 1950, so the whole decade of the 1950s and then up into the 60s are... my childhood. And I realized when I was thinking about telling this story this morning that I'm actually a couple different people. You probably already know that, Stosh, but
I wondered about that a few times.
So in this story, I'm actually Fegula, which was my name from some of my Jewish relatives, but also some of the people in the neighborhood called me Fegula, which my understanding is that Fegula is Yiddish for little bird, maybe little brown bird, but certainly little bird. And because my name's Fanny, Fegula was just the natural. And actually,
good.
I think in the old days, many Fannies or Francises used to be Fegulas. So this story is about the little girl, Fegula, in West Philadelphia, not far from the Philadelphia Zoo. Once upon a time, there was a little girl named Fegula who loved cookies, especially homemade cookies, vanilla cookies, chocolate cookies, ginger snaps, molasses drops, snickerdoodles, sugar cookies, and cinnamon twists. But her mama and her daddy never made any cookies. Not one of those cookies that I just named. Did Fegula's mama and daddy ever make at her house? Not one cookie. But there was a bakery close by on the avenue, just a couple blocks and a couple round the corners from Fegula's small apartment building. And every week, with her mama or her daddy, Fegula would walk to the bakery on the avenue to buy a big loaf of pumpernickel bread, always warm from the baker's oven, never machine sliced. It needed to stay soft and fresh, her daddy said, all week long. And every week, Mr. Goldstein, the baker, who wore a white apron and was often covered in flour and had no hair on the top of his head, gave Fegula a very special cookie, an oatmeal cookie, smooth and shiny on top, and chewy and sweet. But most important, it was enormous. It was bigger than Fegula's hands. She couldn't even hold it in one hand by itself. Now, when Mr. Goldstein gave Fegula the cookie each week, she needed to reach out with both hands and hold it around the edges carefully as she took the first bite. It was, Fegula said, a two-hand cookie. The trip to the bakery always happened on Friday. On the other days, Fegula often asked her mama and daddy to please make some cookies, but they never did. We'll get your cookie at the bakery on Friday, her daddy would say. or cookies. We have half an apple cake and rice pudding I just made yesterday, her mama would say. So, Fagula had to wait for bakery day on Friday. Now, one particular day, Fagula's mama was busy upstairs in their apartment and didn't have time to play. Her daddy wouldn't be home from work for a long time yet. The sun was shining, so Fagula was outside, sitting on the front stoop, but none of her friends were there to play with. She thought if she had a cookie to eat, now that would be something to do. And just then Fagula saw her neighbor's cat, Spotty Cat, tiptoe out from under a parked car. Now, Spotty often spoke to Fagula, and this day she said, "Meow." Well, Fagula was sitting on the front stoop thinking about cookies, and Spotty Cat tiptoed from the street onto the sidewalk, looked up at Fagula, and said, "Meow." And her feet were touching as she sat down. Her feet were side by side, just so, and her long black and white and orange spotted tail was curled around to touch the back of her front feet. So Fagula sat down and made her front paws touch side by side, just so, and pretended she had a long black and white and orange spotted tail to curl around too. A gentle breeze was blowing, and Spotty Cat lifted her little black and white and orange nose and sniffed the breeze to find out the neighborhood news. So Fagula lifted her nose to find out the neighborhood news. Cookies! Oatmeal cookies! Mr. Goldstein at the bakery must be making cookies. She could smell them. Fagula jumped off the stoop. Spotty Cat jumped off the sidewalk and hid under the neighbor's parked car, peering out from behind a back tire to see what the commotion was about. Fagula wondered what would happen next, too. She knew she wasn't supposed to leave the stoop, but she was pretty sure she knew how to get to the bakery on the avenue, and she was very sure it wouldn't take long to get there. Spotty Cat came out onto the sidewalk again and began to wash behind one ear. "Probably," Fagula said to the cat, "I could run there and see Mr. Goldstein, the baker, get my cookie and run back before you finished your bath." Spotty Cat said, "Meow," and just kept washing that one ear. Fagula stepped into the street, crossed the street, and walked in the direction that her mama and her daddy took to go to the bakery. She knew it was just a couple blocks. She started to run so she could be quick. She knew she had to go a couple round the corners. When she came to the end of the first block, she stopped. She looked to the right all the way down the street she was about to cross, and then she looked to her left all the way down the street in that direction. She was sure she just had to cross this street and go another block, or maybe two, to find Mr. Goldstein and his cookies. She crossed the street and kept running for another block. When she got to the corner, she looked both ways again. She looked to the right and all the way down the street as far as she could see. There were a few things there that looked a little familiar, but she still couldn't see the bakery. She looked to the left and all the way down the street in that direction, and nothing very familiar, but this looked like the avenue, though she couldn't see the bakery either way. She began to walk a little way down the street to her right because that way was more familiar. But she was afraid to go too far because she wasn't sure about the corners. She walked back. She crossed the street to the left so she could walk a little ways in that direction too, and then crossed back and walked again to the right, the way she had started. There was a building on the avenue that looked like the bakery, and there was a big B on the sign, the way she remembered it. but there was no big green awning over the door and the front window. There was a green shade pulled down on the inside of the front window and the inside of the glass on the front door, and that did not look familiar at all. And the front door was dark. She couldn't see lights inside the way she remembered. She walked back and forth some more, and pretty soon she couldn't remember which way she had walked to start with, nor which way she had come to get here, nor which way she would walk to get back to her own small apartment building. When she realized that, she knew she was lost and scared and worried. Fegula began to cry. After a bit of hopping from one foot to the other and walking up and down again and still not recognizing anything, she noticed the sun wasn't shining anymore and the breeze felt chilly. And then a few drops fell from the sky and it started to rain. If the awning had been where she had expected it to be, she might have stood under it to stay out of the rain, but there wasn't any awning, and nothing was where it should be. She was getting wet and cold, and now her nose was running too. She really did not want to wipe her nose on her shirt, and that made her cry even more. And just as she was thinking she might never see her mama again, she noticed a cat walking close along the side of the building where the awning should have been. The cat sat down in front of the dark doorway where the green shade was pulled behind the door glass. The cat sat with her little paws together just so, and her long black and white and orange tail curled around to touch the back of her front feet. "Spotty cat," said Fegula, and took a big step and a hop toward the cat. The cat said, "Meow," and dashed under a parked car. But when Fegula bent down to see where the cat had gone, there was no cat, until she stood up again. And there, walking down the sidewalk, was that black and white and orange spotted tail, and a beautiful black and white and orange nose turned to look at Fegula. "Spotty cat, is that the way home?" said Fegula, and took a not very sure of herself step toward the cat. Spotty cat said, "Ow," and ran behind a tree just at the edge of the sidewalk. But when Fegula ran partway around the tree to look, the cat wasn't there. Fegula turned her face up the tree to see if the cat had climbed it and got rain on her face. But she couldn't see the cat. She walked around to the other side of the tree, and there was that beautiful black and white and orange spotted tail moving fast in the distance, almost a block away now. "Wait, Spotty! I don't like raindrops either," called Fegula, and she ran as fast as she could to catch up. But when she got to the corner, she couldn't see Spotty anywhere, and she was getting ready to cry again when way up ahead in the middle of the next block, she saw a beautiful black and white and orange spotted tail disappearing under a parked car. Quickly then, she looked both ways to check for cars and ran in the direction she had seen the cat, which was a good thing, because just then Fegula heard her mama calling her name in a worried voice, walking very fast toward Fegula as she called. Her mama took Fegula's hand, and Fegula hurried to tell her the story about Spotty cat and the cookie smell on the breeze and how the big green awning wasn't where it was supposed to be and the funny green window shades that were there instead. And her mama said in a very cross voice that running off without knowing where you are going was a very dangerous thing to do, especially since the bakery is closed on Mondays and today is Monday, and jumping off the stoop when you'd been told to stay right there was misbehaving and would mean time in your own bedroom for the rest of the afternoon. But when they finally reached their own front stoop, there in the shelter of the little porch to the small apartment building, was Spotty Cat, who had just finished washing her other ear and starting to groom her tail. At least Fegula thought it was Spotty Cat till she looked over at the neighbor's stoop and saw four more spotty cats sitting there, all washing their ears or grooming their beautiful black and white and orange tails. And she was sure there had never been more than one spotty cat before this. "Look, Mama," said Fagula. "Look at all those spotty cats." But Mama was still cross, and Fagula had to go to her own room and stay there for the afternoon. But she didn't mind too much because she watched the five spotty cats on the front stoop from her bedroom window and drew a picture of the cookie she would get on Friday from Mr. Goldstein when she told him her story. The five spotty cats kept her company on their front stoop all afternoon, saying a friendly meow now and again while sniffing the breeze with their black and white and orange noses. Well, that's almost the end of the story. There weren't any cookies that day, and the little girl's mama and daddy never did make any cookies themselves. The little girl did, though. She had a teacher a few years later after she started going to school who gave her a cookbook, and from it, with just a little help from her teacher and her parents, she learned how to make every cookie recipe in the book. But none of those cookies ever tasted quite as good as Mr. Goldstein's two-hand oatmeal cookies.
Yay. Spotty cat.
Several spotty cats,
yes.
It turned out.
Made me think of my daughters, who always have cats.
Yeah, I've heard those cat stories.
I have lots of cats around. They think they were appointed by the gods to take care of all the cats in the neighborhood, wherever they live.
Wherever they may be.
Yes.
Well, that's what kids do.
Right. So, I think it's time for a station ID. You're listening to the Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. And if you happen to like what you're hearing, you could also check out our podcast at talltales.enlightenradio.org.
What a good idea.
And there are many of our shows posted as podcasts going back for months and months and even
years.
Years.
Yes.
Months for me. I'm a newbie here.
Well, you've been here for a year.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like just yesterday. So I think now would be an appropriate time to mention Stories in the Round.
Okay.
And since you know all about Stories in the Round, since you're the founder and the director and the boss, and I think you should do
you're
that.
You're scaring me, Stosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Stories in the Round. Yes, I do coordinate the Stories in the Round series, which is takes place at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown on Searfoss Pike, 13245 Searfoss Pike. And we did just have our second session of season 5 with Susan Gordon. Susan was our first teller for this season 5, even though we had another session back in March. That was not technically a storyteller. It was two storytellers in a two-person play. Thank you very much, Stosh.
Yes.
For directing that play.
It was
and
my
starring,
pleasure.
And starring in that play. And then this past Monday on April 23rd, we had Susan Gordon as our storyteller. But this month, well, it's not quite this month yet, May, beginning tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
We never told our audience that this is Monday, April 30th, did we? Did we actually
no.
say that? Well, it is Monday, April 30th.
It is April 30th.
So tomorrow begins a whole new month. And at the end of this month on May 28th, which, yes, we know it's Memorial Day, Stories in the Round will be hosting Kevin Cordy from Ohio, a storyteller who tells to all age groups and does a lot of workshopping and professional development with other storytellers.
Yes.
So not only is Kevin done it, do a story concert with us at Stories in the Round on Monday evening. He is also going to lead a workshop that is open to the public, open to our listeners. It'll be at my house, so it's not too scary for everybody, because you know me, right? So call me up at 301-730-1638 and tell me you want to come to the workshop, and I hope to the concert, both, and hear Kevin Cordy. It's his first time in Hagerstown, so far as I know.
I believe so.
And I am really looking forward to it, and he's a good friend of Stasha's.
He's a very good friend.
And Stasha's probably looking forward to it, too.
Yes, yes. And he did a workshop about 2 years ago at my house near Pittsburgh.
And your old house.
My old house.
Pittsburgh. The last you have a house, new house
I
now.
Ever owned.
Ah, you squatter, you.
That's right. We're just renters now.
but you're in the region, and we're happy for that. Right. And then in June, Stories in the Round welcomes Andy Offit Irwin, who you heard just a little while ago today on the radio, because we use his song Tarry Here as our opening most shows. But Andy will be the featured storyteller on June 18th. Now, bear in mind, listeners, that that is not the fourth Monday of the month. Almost all the Stories in the Round storytellers will be here on the fourth Monday of the month, but not that month, because Andy was not available on the fourth Monday. So he's coming the third Monday, and we're looking forward to hearing him again for the second time in Hagerstown. He was here last summer, and I'm hoping you, listener, heard Andy tell Sister True when he came last summer, but you definitely need to hear him this time. He's going to do kind of a follow-up to the Sister True stories, as well as some other shorter things that he thinks we will like and that fit together nicely with that story. In July, on July 23rd, and that is the fourth Monday of the month, we have Magid Melvin Medlitz coming to us from West Philadelphia, speaking of neighborhoods. He doesn't actually live in West Philadelphia anymore, but he did grow up in West Philadelphia, and that's how I know him. He used to be a public school teacher, one of the best teachers in the Philadelphia public school system. But now he's an ordained Magid, which means a rabbinical storyteller of sacred tales. And I've always known him as a magnificent storyteller, but I didn't know him as a teller of sacred tales necessarily. So I'm looking forward to hearing him for the first time. This is also a man who knows how to throw his voice. He has but one vocal cord left, and does a magnificent job of telling stories with that one vocal cord. So it's worth coming to hear him just for that magical ability he has. That's all for now. Okay. What else do you want to talk about, Stosh? Let me give my phone number one more time.
Yes.
Okay. If you're interested in more information about Stories in the Round, which I can say is $10 if you get your tickets in advance for each session, and $12 at the door if you don't, you can reach me to get those advance tickets or to hear more about each of these storytellers at 301-730-1638, 301-730-1638, or you can email me at fanitsky, FANITSKY, at hotmail.com. All right, I'll be quiet now.
You don't have to be quiet. I was going to ask you, has anybody signed up for the workshop?
For Kevin's workshop?
Yes.
Yes, I think we have two people. I need to confirm with them, but that's my impression is that they're definitely coming. Larry Hayes thinks he's coming.
I'm hoping we get a lot more people.
Yes. Well, it's early days yet, and I've been focusing on experienced storytellers, and I think we have a couple experienced storytellers coming. But because Kevin is so good at bridging, Dr. Kevin Cordy, at making everyone welcome and bringing the best stories out of people, I'm hoping we get a big mix of tellers.
I do, too. You should tell your congregation to attend that.
At the Unitarian Universalist Church, even though the workshop will not be there, it will be at my cozy little home. But yes, there are a lot of people from the congregation who come to storytelling and come to workshops.
That's going
to
be a good workshop, I guarantee it.
Okay, I will work on that this week.
Lots of fun.
And by next week, I should be able to give you a highly increased count.
That would be great.
Okay.
Yes. I'm looking forward to that because I'm going to be missing storytelling in the next 2 months because I'm getting some repair work done.
But not in May. You will be here.
Right. I'll be here in May. Okay, so.
A story.
I think it's time for a story.
A stash story.
Yes. We're doing neighborhood stories, and I thought that what I would like to do is talk about my neighborhood. I grew up in Baltimore. I'm a bit older than Fanny. And I think of the 50s as my real neighborhood years, because I left the neighborhood in 1959 when I went into the Army at the age of 17, and only briefly lived there again for a short while. And the rest of my life I've been in other places. But I always think of Baltimore as my home, and I have great feelings about the neighborhood. So I decided I would talk about a pretty typical Monday in my life as a young man. Up in the early 50s, when I was about 10 years old. This is a Monday in the summertime when there is no school. And so one of my big questions to my father on lots of weekends at this time was, especially on Saturday, was, why do I have to get up on Saturday? There's no school. And my father's remark was always, your mother wants you to get up. And
whatever, that was all he needed to
that's
say.
That's right, because whatever my mother wanted, my mother pretty much got.
She was not raising a sloth.
No, she wanted me to be up and at him. So, a typical Friday in our family, mostly with me and my mother. My dad off to work at Baltimore Gas and Electric Company, where he put gas pipes in the ground and repaired gas pipes in the ground and was a troubleshooter on gas lines that leaked. That job was very dangerous, and twice in my young life, my father was involved in a gas line explosion, once that put him in a hospital and at home for a number of months. And in those days, they didn't have what you call sick leave and things like that. And the gas company at that time did not have a union. However, my father's paycheck arrived at the house every Friday by a person. In those days, they got paid with an envelope with money in it. And my father got paid every week while he was recovering, which was the reason my father was against the idea of unions later in his life when they tried to bring a union into the gas company. They eventually did, but even he didn't believe in it, because I heard him say often, if we have a union, they're going to give us 14 days of sick leave. And if I had 14 days of sick leave when I was in that explosion, we wouldn't have had any food on the house for the next couple of months. So anyway, my dad was at work, and a typical Friday, my mother sent me on errands, and she had a particular way of sending me on errands. She would say, I have some errands for you to run, and I would say, oh, where am I going to go? And she would say, first, I want you to go to Mr. Butka's. Now, Mr. Butka ran a fish store, and it was just about 60 feet away from, maybe 60 yards away from our house. It was on the corner of Bank and Ann Street. Our house was on Bank Street, so I just had to walk to the corner and then go catty corner, as we would say, across to where Mr. Butka's fish store was. When I started out from our house, I just walked a short distance from our front step, and I would pass a garage. That's what we called it. There was a garage door, a wooden double door, and it was for the property on the corner. That garage door was locked. There was a big sign no parking in front of this garage door. In fact, there were two signs, one on each of the double doors. I lived in that, next to that garage double door, almost 18 years. And from the time I could remember as a child until the time I went into the Army, I never saw those doors open. I never saw a car go in or a car go out or anyone doing any work in the garage. All I remember seeing are the two neatly printed, professionally printed signs, no parking in front of this garage door. And in those days, people did not park any place that wasn't theirs. My father's parking space in front of our house at 1804 Bank Street was never occupied by a car other than his, unless it was a relative of ours from out of town. Mr. George and Miss Julie lived to our left, and their parking spot was never occupied by anything except Mr. George's car. All day long, when the men in the neighborhood were at work, those parking spaces were pretty much empty. The only person who actually used our parking space was Mr. Bob, who had a real garage, an auto repair garage, directly across the street from us, and it occupied a space of about, that would be about four row houses, and had large garage doors, and was busy all day long. I never remember a day when that garage wasn't busy except on Sundays. And because he had cars to repair, to change oil, to do different things to, he often would move a car once it was finished out to the street and put it in front of one of the houses that where he knew the driver who owned that house was at work. And so his space was available. And the entire block had their work done on cars at Mr. Bob's garage. And so he was allowed to do that. And he was a real nice guy. My father spoke highly of him. In fact, many years later, when my father passed away, I was able to get a good referral from Mr. Bob about how much my dad's car was worth as I was his executor of his will, and I had to sell the car. Well, my mom said, I want you to go to Mr. Butka's, and here's a note. It'll tell him what I want. I'd like going to Mr. Butka's fish store because it was cold in there, and he had counters that were wooden counters, but the top of them were built like trays, and they were lined with some kind of metal, and they were packed with ice.
Zinc?
I don't know. I don't. Oh, right. I see, like a sink with zinc. Huh? No. I'm not sure what the metal was. And I never thought to ask anybody because I was so fascinated that we go in there. And all of those trays were packed with ice, and there was fish on top of them. And some of them had cans. There were cans of crab meat and cans of other kind of aquatic things in them. And I'm not always sure what some of those others were. But I would hand Mr. Butka the note from my mother, and he would always say, okay, just in a couple minutes. And he would proceed to pick out whatever my mother had asked for and clean the fish. Cut off the heads, slice them open, clean them out, wrap them, and tell me to make sure I got across the street safely, and in no time I'd be gone. The interesting thing about Mr. Butkus was I never had to pay for anything. And when I was pretty young, I'd started going over there probably when I was about seven, and I just thought he gave his fish away. But by the time I was 10, I learned that my dad would go by on Friday on his way home from work and stop and usually pay Mr. Butka whatever was owed, because it was just a regular thing. And So I took the fish back home. My mother put it in the refrigerator. And actually, at that time, we had just gotten a refrigerator. Until I was about the age of 9, we had an icebox. And a man by the name of Mr. Sergi drove a funny-looking truck that had ice blocks in the back of it. And I actually met one of my high school friends, a young man by the name of Joe Sergi, who was a year behind me in high school. But as a kid, Joe Sergi worked on that ice truck and would bring a block of ice up the alley at the age of 10 and knock on our door. When I opened it or my mother would open it, he would just walk into the kitchen and open the door on the ice box and put the ice in. My mother would hand him, I believe it was only 35 cents, and he would say thank you and go off. And I didn't know that he and I would become schoolmates in high school until, well, probably the second week I was in high school. And there was Joe Sergi, the ice man. So then my mother said, now I want you to go to Mr. Andy's. Mr. Andy's was right across the street and a little ways down. His store was on the opposite corner from Mr. Butka's. His store was on Ann and Bank Street also. And I would go past the garage to the corner, and on the corner, on the same side of the street where I lived, was a furniture repair store. It was a fascinating place. There were pieces of furniture in all disarray in that store. And the local kids, myself included, if we were quiet, we could go into the store and stand and watch as, I think his name was John, who would be repairing legs or gluing things together or sometimes stretching fabric over a frame to repair furniture. I never saw any brand new pieces of furniture in that store. Wasn't a place where you could just go in and buy a brand new table. It was just for repairs. And it was pretty busy all the time. Well, on that corner, I would turn and stare across the street. As soon as there was no traffic, run over to Mr. Andy's, which was a really interesting store. I just can't even imagine it nowadays. But everyone who went to Mr. Andy's store, it was a grocery store, you would go in and never touch the shelves. Mr. Andy and his wife, and he had two men and sometimes two women. And on a Friday afternoon and sometimes on Saturdays, there would be all six of them working behind the counter. The store wasn't very big, but those six people would be there on a busy day. And on this particular day, there were only two of the men working with Mr. Andy and his wife. And I would give him a note from my mother, and he would say, okay. And he'd hand the note to one of the other people because he didn't work the shelves. Mr. Andy did all the meat cutting. He was the boss. And I think he didn't want to get his fingers dirty touching things on the shelves. And I think that later on I realized that that was probably so that he wouldn't have to worry about contaminating the meat and things like that. The person who got the note would then look at the note and see how big the order was, grab either a cardboard box from the back room or a large bag, and often I would have a kind of shopping bag or cloth shopping bag with me and hand it to him. And then he would walk around the store, again, which wasn't very big, but had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of different kinds of things, noodles and canned goods and cereal and, oh, milk and everything. And he would select the items from the shelves or from the place where the milk was kept in a cooler and put it into the bag or the box. And once it was all filled, he would then say, and almost always they said, even to me, though, It was kind of a joke, I think. What's your number? And I would say, we don't have a number. And they would make a big deal of it. And sometimes it was embarrassing because there would be adults in the store and I'd be the only kid. And they'd say, you don't have a number. Mr. Andy, this kid doesn't have a number. And Mr. Andy would have a big chuckle and say, that's okay. He's going to pay with cash. And I would hand him some money. And again, whoever was, whichever male was waiting on me would make a big deal about, they let a kid your age carry money all the way across the street, and on with that. Well, it turned out that a majority of Mr. Andy's customers did have a number, and that number corresponded to two books, one that was kept in an alphabetical order in the store, a numerical order in the store in a box, and another that was exactly like that, had the same number on it, but the person who had it kept it at home. So when you got your order filled, they would write the cost in your book and then write the cost in Mr. Andy's book. And at the end of each month, there was a specific day that was always posted in Mr. Andy's store when you should come in and settle your bill. Well, my mother had lots of interesting characteristics, and one of them was she did not want to have to owe money for a month at a time. She didn't like that system. She believed that we should only buy things that we could afford at the time. And that's what happened. So I would take our groceries home and my change, and they would always put the change in the bag to make sure that I didn't lose either the change or the groceries, because I had a long trip home just across the street. I took their ribbing good-naturedly as I got older, because I realized that that was probably the highlight of their day. To tease a young boy. When I got home, my mother said, I need you to pick up your father's pants at Mr. Pickner's. I stopped at that point and said, Mom, if you have a lot more errands, could you just tell me what they all are and I'll just go do them? Well, no, just go to Mr. Pickner's and pick up your father's pants. And here, and she gave me a couple of dollar bills. Well, Mr. Pickner was a German man who had a dry cleaning business, and his store was next to Mr. Andy's on Bank Street. So, again, it was a very short trip, and I always liked going to Mr. Pickner's because I knew he was German, and I also knew that he drank a little bit, or maybe a lot. And he was always fussing, but I never understood what he was fussing about because he did it in German. And he had a pretty heavy accent. He also had a machine that was just marvelous to me. I'll describe it as best I can. Imagine a machine made of metal that looks like a hoagie roll. That's not real fat. The bottom half looks like the bottom half of a hoagie roll that has been sliced open, a thin loaf of bread. And the top half was like the top half of that hoagie roll. Now, the machine was made of metal, but both the bottom half and the top half were padded some way. There was some material in there, very tightly stretched, and Mr. Pickner would stand in front of that machine. It had a big handle on it, and he could grab the handle. And when he was using it, for instance, to press something, it was an ironing gadget, he would pull that top down, and it would be like those pants or a shirt or something was inside the hoagie roll. He would step on a lever down near the floor, and he would do that three or four times. And when he stepped on it, you could hear a sound like psh, 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 and he was releasing steam into the bottom half of that hoagie roll. On the top part of the machine, there was a wooden handle that he could grab, and he would also pull that down three or four times, the same kind of sound. Psh, 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 psh. And he was putting steam in to the top and the bottom, and that steam was going then into the clothes. And it wasn't watery. It was just hot steam. And when he lifted it up, the machine made a breathing noise each time. So it was fun to go there. He would be going, psh, 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 psh. And he would give me the pants on a hanger and never with a piece of plastic over it. I didn't see plastic over clothes from a dry cleaner's until I was, I think until I came home from the Army, which, you know, when I was about 21 years old. I took the pants over to the house and said finally to my mother, "Now, do I have any more errands?" And she said, "No, if you want to go to the park with your friends, you can." But I realized it was far too late. My friends would be finished the ball game by the time I got there. So instead, I went and played ball with a ball against the yard, in the yard against the wall. One other place in the neighborhood that I want to mention, but this is on a different day. And it took place when I was very young, but one of my favorite places. Just a little ways up the block on Bank Street, across the street, and actually was the next building to Mr. Bob's garage. But there was an alley. Dorham Street was an alley between Mr. Bob's garage and Leo's bar. Mr. Leo was my favorite neighborhood character. He drove a cab all day. He opened his bar at 5:30 in the evening, and it was open until as late as it could be, I guess, midnight or even later. And Mr. Leo must have had a lot of strength, because he told me, even as an older kid, that he did drive his cab every day, and then he opened the bar, and he was the head bartender. I imagine he must have taken breaks at times, but on Saturday nights at my house, very often my dad and mom would sit out on the front stoop, especially in the warm weather, and Mr. George and Miss Julie Fabula, who lived next door, would sit on their stoop. Miss Rose, who lived next door to the Fabulas, would come over, and my dad and Mr. George both had gotten some nice wooden chairs that folded and could be set on the sidewalk. And sometimes it would be 8, 9, maybe even 10 adults sitting on the stoops on the Saturday evening and talking, sometimes singing, and having a beer. Well, you could buy a beer in bottles, and you could buy cases of beer, but a better way to buy beer was to get it fresh out of the tap at Mr. Leo's. And when I was old enough to cross the street by myself, I was only about 6, and able to carry things, my father sent me over one Saturday evening with a bucket. And the bucket was only used for beer and kept very clean. And it wasn't as big as a scrub bucket, but it was a decent size. And he sent me over to Mr. Leo's with 50 cents. And I went into the bar, right in the front door. And one of the exciting things for a 6-year-old, Mr. Leo saw me, saw the bucket, and of course he knew my father had sent me, shouted to the people in the bar, "Step aside, Stosh is here for his bucket of beer." And of course, there was always laughter. And I never minded that because everybody treated me real well. And he would fill that bucket with beer, not quite to the top. It'd be about 2 inches from the top. He would take the money. He would walk me to the door and say, "Be careful. I will watch you as you go across." And I would cross the street very carefully, very slowly, not to spill the beer, and take it to my father, who would then pour the beer into glasses around. And the first time he sent me with the bucket, after that, I was given a pickle jar, a large pickle jar, and I would take that. My father decided that it would be a lot safer and easier on me because it took me a great deal of time to cross the street making sure I didn't spill anything out of the bucket. And with the pickle jar, I could just hug it. It had a big cover on it, a top one it screwed on. So I have fond memories of my block, my neighborhood. And there are a lot more exciting things that happened there. And maybe we'll talk about those another time.
I hope so. What a great story. Getting to know Mr. George and Miss Julie and Mr. Pickner and Mr. Leo in his bar across the street. I have vivid memories of 5-gallon pickle jars, so I'm imagining you crossing the street hugging your pickle jar full of beer. Hugging it to you so you wouldn't spill it. Oh, I've enjoyed these stories.
I'm glad you did. And I lost track of time there.
We're almost, we have a couple minutes left.
Oh, I'm glad you have track of time.
Yeah.
You
should talk about the Speak Story Series because we haven't done that yet.
Wait, Speak Story Series. You can find detailed information at speakstoryseries.com. Let's see. May 8th, a week from tomorrow, Robert Kikuchi Ngojo, one of the founders of Ethnotech, a wonderful, wonderful group that tells stories in many different ways, musical instruments. He uses Asian instruments in his tales. He is going to do a program called Between Shadow and Light, Asian Tales of Wisdom and Woe. June 12th, Scott Whitehair from Chicago will be there telling personal tales. July 10th, Dovey Thomason, Native American storyteller, will be telling a program, How the West Was Spun. August 14th, Corrine Stavish, a program entitled When Good People Do Something. And that's about saving the Jewish people in Denmark during World War II. September 11th, Donald Davis. And if you follow storytelling at all, you know he needs little introduction. He's the grand storyteller of our nation. October 9th, Linda Gorham tells twisted and unconventional tales and fairy tales. And November 13th, Megan Wells, old tales, classical literature, and she is a spellbinding storyteller.
Thank you, Stosh. SpeakStoryseries.com if you want more information about that series. We are going to close out the show. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stosh Siokowski.
Your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org every Monday at 12 noon. We are independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Today's theme has been neighborhood stories. Thanks for listening. Come back next Monday for another show at 12 noon, and stay tuned for more Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. I understand we're going to be showing some of, or playing some of our older shows, but you can also hear those on podcasts at talltales.enlightenradio.org. Talk to you next week.
See you next week.